You know, when you say prepping or going off grid, there's a very specific image that just immediately pops into your head. It's almost a cliche now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're thinking camo gear, basements full of canned goods, maybe a bunker out in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. And it's always about hiding, you know?
Yeah.
It's defensive. The world's broken, so you retreat from it. But this stack of documents we're looking at today, it completely flips that on its head.
It really does. I mean,
Yeah.
we're not looking at a survival manual. This is more like a graduate level textbook for designing a civilization.
We are doing a deep dive into the curriculum of something called the Diriticular Academy. We've got the syllabi, we've got hardware blueprints for a certification they call the Sovereign Systems Architect. And the hook here is just, it's so audacious. They're not teaching you how to survive a crisis. They're teaching you how to build a community node that actually gets stronger from one.
The term they keep coming back to in all the Sorkin material is anti-fragility. It's a concept from Nassim Taleb. And the idea is, most of our systems, like the power grid, they're fragile. They break under stress. A robust system might resist stress for a while, but an anti-fragile one, it actually feeds on chaos. It uses stress to get better.
And that is the mission for this deep dive. We are going to take apart this sovereign stack, look at how they integrate high-end computing, heavy industrial power, and even agriculture into one single looping system. And I gotta say, reading it feels less like a camping guide than more like a manual for, I don't know, terraforming Mars or
Well,
something.
it's serious engineering. We're talking plasma physics, thermodynamics, even algorithmic finance. But the goal itself is actually very practical. Move away from big, brittle, centralized grids and toward these decentralized nodes that can handle what they call black swan events.
So black swan events, we're
Ooh.
talking about what? A total supply chain collapse, a massive solar flare, something that takes down the entire banking system. Exactly, those kinds of things. And in that scenario, the architect doesn't just hunker down. They flip a switch and they become the new local utility. They become the new center of gravity.
Okay, so let's get into the nuts and bolts then.
Yeah.
Because before you can become this architect, which is the top level certification, the syllabus says you have to master the two building blocks, the digital and the physical layers.
Right. You can't design the whole organism until you understand how the organs work. So the first prerequisite they list is the CRA. That's the Certified RIOS Administrator.
The digital side, okay.
Yeah.
But looking at the specs for the machine they use, this RIOS CC1000, this is not a laptop you just go pick up at the store. This thing looks like it fell out of a military transport.
No, it's definitely not consumer grade. The docs describe it as a ruggedized blade server. So think of this thick, heavy slab of computing power in a solid aluminum case. But the key thing isn't just the processing power, it's that it's designed for what they call zero trust environments.
Zero trust. We hear that a lot in cybersecurity, but what does that mean for a physical piece of hardware? Well, in a normal office, you trust the building. You
Right.
trust the power is on. Here, zero trust means you assume the physical world is hostile. You assume the internet is down, the power grid is offline, and the hardware has to be shielded against things like an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse. It has to run dark.
Meaning it doesn't need to phone home to Apple or Microsoft to work.
Exactly. Which brings us to I think, the most interesting part of that course, something they call Project Phoenix.
Right, the Black Start protocol.
Yeah.
Break that down. Black Start is a power plant term, right?
Correct. A black start is how you restart a power station using only its own internal power, no help from the outside grid. So Diriticular takes that idea and applies it to the internet itself. Imagine the entire cloud just evaporates. AWS is gone. Google's offline. Project Phoenix is the training to spin up an entire local cloud from a cold hard drive.
So you're not just connecting to the internet, you're basically becoming a tiny local version of it.
Locally, yes. The course walks you through it. You host your own chat servers, your own file storage, your own financial ledgers, and then you use a mesh network to broadcast that out to your community.
They mention using Starlink Roam for the main connection to space, the backhaul, and then Wi-Fi 6 to create a local bubble of connectivity.
We call it the nerve system. If the global net breaks apart, you create your own. You're not a user anymore, you are the infrastructure.
Okay, so that's the brain of the operation. But a brain needs blood. It needs power. And that takes us to the second prerequisite, the SPT, the Sovereign Power Technician.
This is the physical layer. And I think this is where it gets really surprising for most people. When you think off-grid power, you think of one thing.
Solar panels and batteries.
Right. And maybe a noisy diesel generator.
Yeah.
The SPT course, it barely even mentions solar. It focuses almost entirely on a technology called aggregate energy, which is based on micro-GTL, gas to liquids.
This is the plasma gasification stuff, I have to admit. Plasma gasification, it sounds like something straight out of Star Trek. Is this tech for real?
Oh, it's very real. But it's usually only found in, you know, massive city-sized waste management plants. What Dirticular has done is apparently shrink it down to the size of a shipping container. And the key distinction is, you are not burning trash.
What's the difference? I mean, fire's fire.
Not at this level. Burning is combustion, it's inefficient, it makes smoke, ash. Plasma gasification uses a plasma torch. We're talking temperatures hotter than the surface of the sun, 4,000 degrees Celsius. Mm. And at that heat, you don't burn things. You dissociate their molecular bonds.
You're literally tearing the molecules apart.
Precisely. You can feed it almost anything. Biomass, old tires, plastic waste, and the plasma turns it into something called syngas.
Synthetic gas.
Yep. It's mostly hydrogen and carbon monoxide. And you can either burn that gas directly to generate electricity, or, and this is the GTL part, you can run it through a catalyst and condense it into liquid diesel fuel.
Okay, that's the alchemy moment. You put a plastic bottle in one end and you get usable fuel out the other end.
It completely reframes what garbage is. It's not a liability, it's feedstock.
Mm.
But the course is very clear. This is not a set it and forget it system like solar. The safety module talks about having a pilot seat mentality. You're actively managing high-pressure vessels and flammable gas.
I saw that. The manual says you are not a janitor. You are a refinery operator. You have to watch gauges, manage flow rates. It sounds intense.
And that's the point. It requires a high level of technical skill. It's not for passive consumers.
So we have the admin running the digital brain, the technician running the industrial heart. Now we can get to the master level, the main event for today. The sovereign systems architect. The SSA.
The capstone, yeah. The syllabus makes this really great distinction. It says, technicians keep the lights on. Admins keep the network running. Architects design the civilization.
That is a heavy statement, designing a civilization. It sounds a little bit arrogant.
It sounds grandiose, I know, but they mean it from an engineering standpoint. The architect's job is integration. It's to stop seeing the generator and the server as two separate things and to start treating them as a single organism.
And the first big concept they teach for that is something called the Velcro Principle.
Or the physics of integration. This is where we get into thermodynamics. The core idea is actually really simple. Waste heat is just misplaced energy.
Okay, give us the real world example from the course. How does that actually work?
All right, so think about that Ryo server, that data center. It's pumping out a massive amount of heat.
Mm.
Normally you'd spend a ton of money on air conditioning just to get rid of that heat. So you're paying for electricity twice.
Right. Once to run the computer and once to cool it down. It's incredibly inefficient.
So the architect is trained to design a liquid cooling loop. They capture that hot coolant from the server.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of venting it, they pump it directly into an adjacent greenhouse.
Agrivoltaics.
Exactly. You use the waste heat from your crypto miner or your email server to keep your crops warm in the winter. Or maybe you use it to pre-dry the biomass before it even goes into the gasifier.
And then the waste from the farm goes back into the gasifier.
Yes, that's the circular input loop. The farm waste feeds the agri unit. The agri unit powers the server. The server's heat warms the farm. And to close the loop completely, that same server runs the software that controls the farm's automated irrigation.
It's so elegant. It's like one of those sealed ecosystems in a glass jar, but for heavy industry.
It's a closed loop. And in a place where resources are scarce, like a remote community or a disaster zone, efficiency isn't about saving a few bucks. It's about survival. You cannot afford to waste a single joule of energy.
Speaking of money, that's where the course takes a really sharp turn. I was expecting more physics and code. I was not expecting Module 3 to be basically a crash course in investment banking.
Sovereign economics. And this is fascinating. They're very pragmatic. This hardware costs real money, so the architect has to learn how to run their node like a business.
And the key concept they teach for this is the spark spread.
Which is a term they borrowed directly from professional energy traders. The spark spread is the difference between the cost of your fuel and the selling price of the electricity you make from it. It's your profit margin.
But in this model, you are the power plant.
Exactly. And the architect has to learn to make these real-time algorithmic decisions. So imagine you've just made a tank full of syngas from some old tires. You have three choices. Choice A, you burn it for electricity to mine crypto or sell cloud computing time to a client.
Turning gas into a digital asset.
Right. Or choice B, you run the GTL process, turn it into physical diesel fuel, and sell that to a local trucker. Or choice C, you just store that energy in a battery bank for later.
And the spark spread is the calculation that tells you which of those is the most profitable decision to make at this exact moment.
Yes. They even have this proprietary tool, an Excel model called the Sovereign Arbiter, where students have to build a full 10-year profit and loss forecast. They're constantly making a choice. Is this electron worth more as a Bitcoin or as a drop of diesel?
That just completely reframes the whole idea of homesteading. It's not just about subsistence, it's about commodity trading.
Which leads to the digital flywheel idea.
Hmm.
The argument is you take the profits from selling energy and you reinvest it into upgrading your digital infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
Faster switches, better antennas.
Why does a farm need lower latency?
Because if your network is better, you can charge more for ISP services.
Mm.
You attract higher paying clients who want to lease your computing power for their own work.
Ah, so you're building a revenue stack.
Exactly. ISP subscriptions, fuel sales, carbon credits, compute leasing. The flywheel spins faster and faster. More energy means a better network, which means more revenue to make more energy.
It's sort of hypercapitalism in the service of survivalism.
But.
But. There's always a but. None of this tech matters if the community you're in doesn't trust you.
And that brings us to Module 4, Governance and Human Systems.
This felt like the biggest left turn in the whole curriculum. We go from talking about plasma torch pressure ratings to drafting a constitution.
Because that's the most common point of failure. There's a line in the expert commentary that's really blunt. It says, technology implies a social structure. If you control the power and the internet for a small town, you are, for all intents and purposes, the government.
And they actually make students draft town charters.
Think of the conflicts. If you run the local cloud server, who actually owns the medical record stored on it? Is it you, the patient?
Or what about security cameras? That's a huge one.
Right. Who gets to see the footage from the cameras guarding the generator? Can the architect just spy on people? These are political questions, not technical ones. So the course forces students to write up these data privacy charters, basically legal agreements, before a single server gets turned on.
And this gets mapped onto the physical space, too, the zero-trust spatial layouts.
It's just standard security design. You create zones. Zone 1 is public. Anyone can come use the Wi-Fi kiosks or charge a phone. It's a goodwill gesture.
Zone 2 is for operations, where the feedstock sorting happens.
And Zone 3 is the vault, biometric access only. That's where the server core and the plasma unit are. The point is, this might be a community asset, but it's also critical infrastructure. You can't just have someone wander in and start pushing buttons.
It's such a fine line to walk. You have to be secure, but you can't be a dictator. They even have a section on diplomacy,
which is often the hardest part. Imagine trying to explain to your local zoning board that you want to build a plasma refinery in your barn. You need people skills.
Okay, so you get through the physics, the finance, the politics. You're at the end. The final exam is not a written test.
No. It's the capstone defense. And this is honestly one of the most innovative educational tools I've ever seen.
They use a simulation called Project Umoja for practice, right?
Right, a disaster relief scenario. But for the final, you get a real-world problem, a remote mining town, a hurricane-ravaged island. And you have to design the entire master site plan, blueprints, financials, risk assessment, everything.
And then you have to defend that plan.
But you don't defend it to a person. You present your plan to a panel of AI agents through an interface called Remnant.
This part gave me chills. You're literally arguing with a computer program.
It's a simulation of the stakeholders. One AI plays a skeptical investor grilling you on your ROI. Another one is the town mayor who's worried about safety regulations. Another one is the angry neighbor who thinks your machine is going to explode. You have to verbally justify your design against an AI that's programmed to find every single flaw.
That is unbelievably intense. It's testing persuasion as much as engineering.
And if you pass, if the AI panel signs off on your plan, you earn the black badge.
The gold and black NFT credential?
It's partly a status symbol, sure. But it has real utility. It gives you dealer pricing, a 5 to 10% discount on all the hardware.
Which, on this kind of industrial gear, could save you tens of thousands of dollars right away.
It basically pays for the course on your very first build. And it gives you access to the black book, which is a database of case studies from actual deployments in the field. So you learn from other people's mistakes.
And if you get all three certifications, the admin, the technician, and the architect, you achieve trifecta status.
The full stack, a one-person utility. You can write the code, fix the engine, and run the town hall meeting.
Stepping back for a second, what's the big takeaway here? This feels like a huge shift in what it even means to be skilled.
It's the return of the generalist. I mean, for a century, education has been about hyper-specialization. The engineer didn't need to know finance. The coder didn't need to know agriculture. Everyone stayed in their lane.
And the architect has to be fluent in all of them.
Because in a real crisis, those lanes disappear. The data doesn't exist without the power. The power doesn't exist without the fuel. The SSA has to synthesize it all. It's a shift from managing a machine to designing an organism.
It really does come back to that idea of anti-fragility.
Yes. If you design the system right, then entropy, all the waste, the chaos, the trash, it stops being your enemy. It becomes your primary resource. And that's a profound mental shift. You stop being afraid of collapse and you start looking for the opportunity within it.
It changes how you see the world. You walk down your street and instead of a garbage can, you see a barrel of potential fuel. You see a hot air conditioner vent and you think about all the wasted energy that could be growing food.
Once you understand the spark spread and the Velcro principle, you can't unsee them. It's like putting on a new pair of glasses that just reveals all these hidden energy flows all around you.
So I think the question to leave you with today comes straight from one of their training scenarios, the blackout drill. It's a little pointed, but I think it gets to the heart of what we've talked about.
It's the ultimate test of this whole mindset.
If the power grid went down tonight and the internet just vanished, would you know how to take the trash on your street and turn it into the power to bring your neighborhood back online? Or are you just another person sitting in the dark hoping someone else comes along to flip the switch?
The architect doesn't wait for the switch. The architect builds it.
That's our deep dive on the Sovereign Systems Architect, a pretty incredible look at where technology, engineering, and pure survival instinct meet. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next one.